Good morning. Welcome to the Board of Public Works. I'm very pleased to and proud to announce today that the Maryland Coastal Bays program has just given our coastal bays the highest grade ever reported in the entire history of the program. It's great news, and it comes after the previous good news about our greatest natural asset, Chesapeake Bay, has its highest score for water quality in 33 years since they've been keeping track of those records as well. And a key indicator that water quality is improving is the underwater bay grasses, which are resurgent, surpassing 100,000 acres for the first time in history. We now actually have dolphins swimming in the Chesapeake Bay. Is that right, Secretary?
Absolutely. Many. Countless.
We have fully funded all coastal and Chesapeake Bay restoration efforts 3 years in a row, including fully funding the Chesapeake and Atlantic Coastal Bays Trust Fund for the very first time in history. And we fully funded program Open Space for the first time in more than a decade. In total, we've invested $4 billion toward wide-ranging bay initiatives, and we made tremendous progress. And all the hard work is really paying off. And this latest achievement in this incredible improvement we're seeing in the quality of the coastal bays is really the result of a tremendous combined effort from a lot of people. I want to thank our Bay Cabinet and their whole teams and just the many dedicated stewards of the environment all across Maryland. And we just want to say to everyone who's been involved in any way in this great accomplishment, we say thank you and congratulations.
It really is a tremendous achievement to have the coastal bays in the B range now for health, and it goes to show you that when Marylanders work together, they can really accomplish great things. In this case, it was not only the state agencies that were heavily involved, but also Worcester County, the town of Ocean City, and the University of Maryland system, Center for Environmental Science in particular, who does the grading and has tracked this for many years. Can't be prouder of that group of folks bringing their combined efforts together to make this happen.
Thank you. Thank you for your leadership.
Not to sound like a broken record, but of course it was based on significant legislation enacted by Maryland General Assembly over the years and supported starting going back to Harry Hughes and those folks. I mean, it takes generations to get where we are.
Absolutely. I just saw Governor Hughes not too long, but he's doing well. With that, I'll turn it over to my colleagues, Madam Treasurer.
Let me just say, I don't usually take any time, but a couple of minutes. I just got back from a meeting of the National Association of State Treasurers in Phoenix, which was very interesting for a number of reasons, one of which was that the speaker I introduced before I left Phoenix was Lindene Patton, who is working with the Secretary and the Climate Change Academy.
Yep.
To help set up a new academy for officers around the state to come together to learn the same things at the same time, to learn lessons from each other about enforcement, both coastal and more broadly across the state. And there she was talking to the rest of the nation.
Wonderful.
It was very exciting. We also had an opportunity to brag about the AAA bond rating and a number of other things. So left feeling great. But then, Mr. Secretary, I have a question.
Yes. Yes.
This is the Secretary next to you, the Secretary of the airport, right? So I was supposed to get in at 1:03 this morning, and I did, which was great. And then we were told by the pilot that the FAA had been concerned about weather north of us and so grounded a bunch of planes, most of which were now empty and were occupying all the gates at BWI. Okay? So the air traffic controllers brought them down. But the reason we sat at the on the tarmac for 2.5 to 3 hours this morning, yes, was because all the gates were occupied, and finally at about 3:15 they towed one of those planes and let this plane full of passengers from Dallas, Texas, to the gate. Now, I don't know what happened between 1:15 and 3:15 to allow them to tow something away from a gate. I know it wasn't the air traffic controllers. Might have been the airlines. Might have been our airport. But can you find out?
Treasurer's a little cranky it. After sitting down on that. Yeah, yeah. I was going to say,
I had an answer. I don't think you're getting to the hotel at 4 in the morning very well.
So do you get cranky when you're tired? I don't know, Carrie.
I think she's doing really well.
Yeah. Yes. There weren't even any cuss words in that one. So, well, I'm sorry you experienced that, but that is actually the airline. It's the airline that controls what aircraft they have at their gates. And I would say someone dropped the ball with the airline.
And it wasn't the pilot who came on the air. Another editorial. He came 4 times to explain to people what was happening, and he had nothing to do with it.
Right.
I mean, he had no control. You read things in the newspaper about people have done things and never apologize for them, which is very interesting.
Well, again,
but
I'm sorry.
That's the question, whether it's the airline or the airport. And I assured people it couldn't possibly be our airport.
No, that is the airline.
Well, let's call Gary Kelly and let him know.
Was that Southwest?
They must have treasure
it
out there.
It was
on
not.
This.
It would have. It probably wouldn't have happened. With
One of those
it
other
was
airlines.
One of the other airlines.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you.
But I do know for a fact, though, they control their gates and what planes they're going to take to their gates, and they drop the ball.
Yes. Well, we should let people know that.
Yeah. We should find out who
people
it was.
People were not happy about it.
Yeah. We will pass along the displeasure of our passengers to have been subjected to a 2.5-hour wait.
They were fortunate it was 2 in the morning instead of 2 in the afternoon because people would have not been sitting there sleeping at 2 in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And anyway, thank you, Governor.
Yeah. Mr. Yeah. Yeah. So, I'm sorry that happened, Madam Treasurer, and I'm sure it was, you know,
I had a good boss.
Infuriating. Just glad you didn't call me.
Should
have. Yeah. So I appreciate all the comments the governor made about environmental progress, because I really do believe that the public sees this issue, which is very partisan at the national level, as being a bipartisan priority here in the state of Maryland, and I salute the governor and the legislature and everyone else who's working together. I happen to have something else on my mind today, and it's called a hockey game this evening. Yeah. The Stanley Cup champion, Washington Capitals, born to sorrow, finally, after 44 years, won the Stanley Cup, and they're opening their season tonight against the big, bad Boston Bruins. So I just want to give a shout-out to everybody that is interested in a spectacular team that is going to go and hopefully win the Stanley Cup once again. Or if everybody is sick of seasons that are going on with our baseball teams, we are open for business now with the Washington Capitals. Maybe the governor will take me to a game sometime. But I do have one issue that I want to address, and that is a recent Baltimore Sun article that was published last Thursday about considerable maintenance issues that Baltimore City Public Schools are experiencing. Having sat on this board for over a decade and having reviewed thousands of school maintenance reports that used to be part of this board's jurisdiction or our constitutional duties, to provide appropriate oversight of the public school construction program. That has now been moved elsewhere. But I happen to be very well aware of the maintenance issues and the challenges posed by the fact that for years they've gone unaddressed and the problems have only gotten worse. In fact, I recall that I believe it required the election of Governor Hogan to even get the maintenance reports produced. Maybe my recollection is faulty there, but a lot of their schools in Baltimore are decades old, but it certainly isn't unique to Baltimore City. Everybody's got old schools. Some people take care of them. How about Allegheny High School? 93 years old. Spectacularly maintained. You could eat your lunch off the corridors in a 93-year-old school. It was the oldest school in the state. Despite its age, the school was in very good shape. We didn't hear about any health concerns or structural concerns that we often hear about Baltimore City school facilities. Over the last 10 years, Baltimore City has received more than $500 million in state school construction dollars, yet only 17% of their school facilities were rated as superior or good. 17%. Many school systems had 80, 90% good or superior. And unsurprising to any of us on this board, because this is a go-to talking point that I hear all over the place and was prominently mentioned in this unfortunate article, the CEO of the school system, Dr. Santalisi, blamed this board for deferral of critical projects. Now, that takes some major league fact-changing. Fire, safety, roofs leaking, all because this board held back $5 million in funding to force them to put air conditioning. That's her claim, that many of these problems came from this board forcing her and others to implement an air conditioning plan. Not sure what air conditioning plan she's referring to, since more than 70 schools had to close down due to lack of cooling during the first week of this school year. And we've gotten conflicting answers from the city over the last several years on the status of air conditioning projects and the reasons why they're reverted. $40.2 million in state funding for HVAC projects between 2004 and 2017 have been reverted back to the state. And those fires, safety, and roof projects that are blazing out now with saying, we have $3 billion in deferred maintenance needs up in Baltimore City. Oh, we really need to take care of that. They didn't just pop out of nowhere. It's been deferred and deferred and deferred for year after year and decade after decade by the very people that should be responsible for fixing the problem. I can talk about this for hours, Governor, but everybody's in a happy mood here, so for the sake of the board's time and the overall karma of the month before the election, I just want to set the record straight, because the citizens of Baltimore and Maryland taxpayers deserve transparency and accountability about what's going on in that school system. Thank you, Governor.
Governor, could I, we are all concerned about maintenance of the school buildings, obviously, around the state, including the city, and of our state buildings. I understand from DBM that unmet requests for state facilities is $3.5 billion, which most of which is for deferred maintenance, and that's just the generally funded buildings. It's a serious problem. That's one of the reasons the 21st century school bill, which you all supported, and which has a couple of schools being approved today, incorporates requirements for maintenance in the CIP, and the city is working with the IEC, which approved them. They have plans now. Obviously, there is not enough money to go around. Obviously, maintenance was not helped by cutting $5 million, although I understand the intent to have all the rooms with room air conditioners. But I think it's very important to note that we are purposely holding our debt down, as the Secretary knows, and in doing that, obviously, work on both the state buildings and the local schools is being slowed down. Those are numbers. I mean, there's numbers. You can look at them. We had this discussion last week. We don't have to go through it again. But at some point, the state is going to have to look at the crumbling infrastructure. You never hear the term infrastructure without the adjective crumbling these days. And the deferred maintenance across the state in both the schools and the state buildings. It's something we're going to have to deal with.
Well, there certainly was a lot of funding cut from the schools in the previous administration. We have now record-funded schools 4 years in a row, $25 billion, record school construction.
That's what money will do for you.
And, it's used as an excuse that they didn't fix the heat and air conditioning. That's why they can't now fix the other things. It's ludicrous. Altamar City is the fourth highest funded large school system in America. They receive three times the funds that the average school system does, and we've got to figure out how to make them more accountable for spending the money and not fixing the problems. With that, I'm going to turn it over to the secretary.
I just want to add one other comment. If they put me in charge of that system for 6 weeks, I would have every classroom air-conditioned and heated this winter, and I would do it within the existing budget. And as far as the fire safety and roof and crumbling infrastructure, we would address that in a way which other jurisdictions have done, which is getting the job done and stop this bureaucratic blaming of the Board of Public Works for what they have failed to do. I mean, come on, guys. This is, this is just basic, honest, open, transparent, accountable government. Do your job. And I understand the superintendent backed off of her claim, I guess, when she testified here at one point. But to have a bunch of bureaucrats who have failed their jobs blaming this board for that mess, I find to be offensive.
Let's get started with the secretary's agenda.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. If you permit me for one moment to share a piece of Maryland constitutional trivia with the audience, some people were interested when I told them this morning, that the Constitution requires the Board of Public Works to hold regular sessions in the city of Annapolis on the first Wednesday of October, and that is why you are here, because they are required to sit here on the first Wednesday in October. To start off the first Wednesday in October meeting, I would like to tell you that there are 9 items on the Secretary's agenda. There are 2 reports of emergency procurements.
Any questions on the Secretary's agenda?
Item two
is public safety. I do believe Mr. Bazanson's here. This is the Chesapeake Detention Facility.
A2.
This is not public safety. They're A1. I do believe that Mr. Dimbrow is here to talk. Yes, Office of Chief Medical Examiner.
Good morning,
ma'am.
Please, the board. My name is Dana Dimbrow, appearing on behalf of the Department of Health.
What is this item?
This is a gas chromatograph mass spectrometer. Oh, I'm sorry I butchered that. It's one of my favorite words. It's probably the coolest name of any machine I ever heard. It's a gas chromatograph mass spectrometer. And what it does, it has the enormous capability of identifying substances. In this case, it's going to be used for a fentanyl derivative analysis to identify the cause of death of about 5 Marylanders a day during the opioid crisis.
Good. I just want to compliment you and your agency, but also the governor and the legislature, for Maryland's ongoing efforts to combat the devastating opiate epidemic that has touched the lives of millions of Americans across the nation. It's an epidemic. And I'm glad that, Governor, under your leadership and local governments across Maryland, we are investing in programs and initiatives to expand access to treatment sites and services for our friends and our neighbors who need a helping hand as they battle this deadly addiction. I guess fentanyl is the main culprit these days, but it's an ongoing battle that our communities are facing. It's endemic from Western Maryland to the Eastern Shore, Baltimore region, Southern Maryland, my area around Washington. Everybody is alarmed. So I want to salute you, Governor, and our colleagues in the General Assembly and local governments. We're working together to save lives and help our fellow citizens overcome their addiction to opiates.
Thank you, Mr. Controller, on behalf of the Office of the Chief Medical Examiner. And I will say that in the course of internal discussions at the Department of Health, I specifically said the governor has called this an emergency. That means it's an emergency. We will make this emergency acquisition. This was done with 100% federal funding because we were allowed to do that. And I'm very pleased that it didn't cost the state taxpayer a dime out of the general revenue fund, only out of our federal tax dollars. And the Office of the Chief Medical Examiner is very pleased to have this new incredible device at its disposal.
Thank you, Mr. Bender.
Could I just say, just reading the item, Dana, the emergency was declared August 1st, the contract awarded August 22nd?
That's correct.
That's fast. We so often see emergencies that go on for months and is now reported in the month of September. That's really the way it should be.
Thank you very much. It's called doing our job. That's what we do.
Thank you. Any other questions on the Secretary's agenda? Is there a motion?
Move approval.
Second. See nothing on the Secretary's agenda. We'll move on to DNR real property agenda.
Good morning, Governor, Mr. Comptroller, Madam Treasurer. For the record, I'm Mark Belton, the Secretary of the Maryland Department of Natural Resources, and we have 14 items on our real property agenda for your review this morning.
Any questions for Secretary Belton?
No.
Motion?
Move approval.
3-0.
Thank
you. We're going to move on to there's no DVM agenda.
Yeah. Governor, I'm here because the Constitution said I had to sit.
Last time we didn't have a DVM agenda.
Yeah. We cleared our decks before we came in.
Wow. Good job. You're off the hook. We're going to move to the university system.
Good morning. Joe Evans, representing the University System of Maryland. We have three items on the agenda. Here to answer any questions.
Any questions?
Yes. Item 1C.
Morning. Bill Oland, Executive Director of the College Park Service Center.
Yeah, I understand this item is to provide compliance with the Americans with Disabilities Act at one of your, the student union building. That's terrific. Very supportive of that. But I wanted to ask about the troubling reports that have been well documented about a shortage of comfortable and healthy on-campus housing for students. These are students whose parents pay a lot in tuition. And apparently, the Baltimore Sun reported that students in Elkton Hall and other residence halls had to be housed in College Park hotels after several reports of mold were made by residents. Some reports from students that the mold made them sick. Last month, the Diamondback published an article highlighting the impact that the heat wave that closed schools in the Baltimore region had on the students who live in several dorms. I find this to be absolutely incomprehensible at your fine flagship university, that there's no air conditioning. Several parents have contacted me and said their kids were in 95-degree temperatures. The university's response apparently was to offer more fans to the students and allow them to sleep in common areas in air-conditioned residence halls, which certainly raises some security questions. And speaking of sleeping in common areas, the Baltimore Sun reported in August that due to a higher-than-expected number of students who were admitted to the University of Maryland, lounges and dorms have been converted into dorm rooms. And they added additional beds in already cramped dorm rooms to accommodate the increase in demand. So I just wanted to get your comment on these serious issues that affect residential life and making sure the students are safe and healthy and comfortable. Apparently, the lowest cost to live on campus, $6,122. You know, if that gets you a bed in a triple or quad room that's not air-conditioned, I certainly hope that you're going to modernize those facilities or have some plans. And the student debt that's being accrued just to pay for their dorm rooms, I, for one, believe they have the right to expect dorms that are air-conditioned, free of mold, and have adequate living spaces. So I guess I'll ask a general question regarding what plans are in the works to address this issue going forward. And specifically, I know that a few years ago, the university was looking very closely at the possibility of using public-private partnerships to address residential capacity challenges. Has there been any consideration of creating new P3s using private sector money to alleviate these issues?
I will start to answer your questions. You have many. Along with me this morning is Mary Hummel. She's Assistant Vice President of Student Affairs. As far as the air conditioning, just remind the board that earlier this year in the February timeframe, you awarded or approved a contract for a new dorm. Actually, we're going to end up with two dorms with 900 beds. So those will be air conditioned. Those are in design. We're hoping to break ground right after commencement this May and have those beds in place using the design build methodology as quick as possible. So that will ultimately allow us to take some of the older dorms offline. At least three of them on the south side of campus are under air conditioned and problematic because of some of the concerns you said. So as far as the move forward, yes, we have responded. We are moving forward. We did award or come to this meeting for an approval to award that contract, and we're moving forward as quick as we can.
So is the are the new dormitories being built with university and taxpayer funds or with private sector funds?
University funds. So it's institutionally funded from student fees. It's an auxiliary service, so whether it's cash or a combination of cash and auxiliary revenue bonds. I don't have that. I didn't bring that information with me this morning. I get that if you're interested. Your question about public-private partnerships, there has been considerable construction in the College Park area, primarily for upperclassmen, juniors, seniors, where considerable growth, and actually there's been a little bit of vacancy issues, but continued growth for student housing, faculty, staff housing, just on the edge of campuses. And that's really being driven by the market. We have not done a triple P in a while just because of interest rates and the cost for us to self to go through the financing. It at this point, it's easier for us to do triple P. But every project, we look at that, and that's really guidance we get from the system. But the one that was approved by the board in February was a direct debt to the university system.
Thank you, Governor.
Thank you. Is there a motion on the university
system? Move approval.
I have not a question, but just to point out the deferred maintenance, $10 million, $1,000, just an example of the sort of thing that every state agency, the university, the highways, we all have to deal. I hope, Secretary Churchill, that your work on deferred maintenance and the new system you're putting in place, Governor, will bring all the agencies together so that at last we can have a picture of what the state really is facing. I look forward to seeing that.
Is there a motion on the system?
Move approval.
Second. Mm-hmm. 3-0. Move to information technology.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, and Mr. Comptroller. For the record, I'm Steve Colby, Assistant Secretary of the Department of Information Technology and for Secretary Leahy. Today we have four items on the agenda. There are agency representatives here to answer any questions you may have.
Questions on information technology. Mm-hmm. Motion.
Move approval.
3-0. Now we're going to move on to the Department of Transportation, and I want to start out by wishing happy birthday to Secretary Ron.
Really?
Yeah.
Thank you, Governor.
30 years old today.
Yeah.
32 times 2. We are in the midst of our CTP tours that occur annually, in which we visit all 24 jurisdictions. And yesterday we were in Worcester County, and they were addressing the need of additional transit for senior citizens 65 and older so they can get to grocery stores and doctor's appointments. And I'm having a hard time thinking about that.
Did you get a ride?
And, Governor, if I may, I did during the state medical investigator's presentation, I did want to add a point to it and the issue of opioids, and that is we have had now for the last 3 years an unexplained increase in fatalities on our roadways. And things that have worked in previous years are not working now. And the state medical investigator has, doctor had shown us this increase in fatalities due to opioids. And it tracks amazingly with the fatalities that we are having on our roadways. As an additional step, we've gone back and looked at 400 fatalities in which there were blood samples going back to 2013. And amazingly, of those samples, nearly 40% had at least one drug in their system. And of 20% of those had at least two drugs in their system. So the issue of drunk driving is morphing into, from an impaired standpoint, drugged driving as well. And it is causing innocent lives as well as those that are taking the drugs. And we're losing those. We are, with the help of the state medical examiner, has really presented data to us that says, here's your problem. We don't know how to address it yet, but we have a known problem now that we can work on. But it's discouraging to see the number of fatalities that are occurring on our roadways and discover that drugs are such a big part of that problem.
It's a good issue to bring up with Clay Stamp and the Opioid Operational Command Center, and their team should be working together with you.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Governor. So, good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, my name is Pete Ron, Secretary of the Maryland Department of Transportation. MDOT has 11 issues before you today, and stand ready for any questions.
Any questions?
Yes, item 4C. Thank you, Mr. Secretary. I don't know whether this question is for you or someone from MTA is here, but I believe this is a contract for reconstruction of the Metro subway link tracks near Johns Hopkins Metro Station. I'm very supportive of the item, but obviously we need to ensure the safety of passengers and efficiency and reliability. But I did have a question about the background material saying that the work is going to be completed during a full shutdown for 19 days, and I'm just wondering whether MTA has notified the public, and will there be bus services offered to passengers, or how are you handling the 19-day shutdown?
Okay. Let me start, and that is, so first, I apologize that information is now outdated. We have made the decision, and in fact, we will continue to work going forward to avoid full shutdowns however we can. And so we'll be single tracking this, and the work will go on so that we can continue the services to our customers. And going forward, Administrator Quinn has actually taken the position that we will avoid full shutdowns whenever possible. And so it increases our costs slightly, but it ensures that we continue to provide good service to Marylanders who are using the system. What did I miss, Joe?
Not nail it.
All right.
Yeah, but you're communicating with the citizens about what's necessary to improve the efficiency and safety of the lines.
Yes.
Absolutely. Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you
for the update.
Is there a motion?
Could I just point out, as the Secretary knows, while it might cost a little more, it's probably cost beneficial to the economy in the area altogether, because people can get around and get to work.
The user costs. Right? There's user costs that are avoided when we can avoid full shutdowns. Full shutdowns really, in my opinion, are only justified with whatever we're working on. If number one, that it's just totally avoidable. Not avoidable. And then also if doing something very quickly over a much shorter period of time can mean that overall the customers have continued service at a better level. So that decision about shutdowns is something that all of our business units are very much aware of and cognizant of, and we do consider customers at every point that we can.
Thank you. Any other questions on transportation?
Move approval.
Second. 3-0 on transportation, which brings us to the Department of General Services.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, and Mr. Comptroller. For the record, I'm Ellington Churchill, Secretary for the Department of General Services. The department has 6 items on our agenda today, and we are ready to answer any questions.
Any questions on DGS?
I have a question, which you can get back on, but on 5E, it's DJS at Hickey. I would just like assurance from the Secretary that this modular unit is still in good shape, and I remember the years past, the problems at Hickey and the problems with the buildings particularly, and that we're on top of all that.
Yes. Good morning. Sam Abbott, Secretary of the Department of Human Services, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, Governor. These modular leases also include maintenance, and so they do have responsibility to continue maintenance. There has been significant maintenance work done, including air conditioning units that were recently installed. We will be installing carpeting and some other items within those units, but they are in good shape. And
you keep an eye on those, all the campuses, what used to be called campuses and cottages, and know that if the feds or somebody came in, that our buildings would make.
I personally visit all of our campuses, all of our facilities, and we have obviously dedicated folks, facility maintenance staff, that regularly visit and inspect. It's also part of our quality assurance. You cannot operate facilities that are in poor repair because you can't deliver services, whether they be treatment services or education services.
But quite candidly, in years past, we have.
That has happened in the past, but it hasn't happened since I've been here. We have invested tremendously in the maintenance of our facilities. I would invite you to visit any of our campuses. You can come unannounced if you'd like to do a spot inspection. We do this all the time. They are in good condition.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary.
Thank you.
Any other DGS?
No. Approval.
Approval. Second. That concludes the Board of Public Works. Yeah. Yes. What?